Mike and I have both been through a lot of hard things in our life, me more than him. You know, I said at one point, every time I'm facing something that seems like so hard and like, you know, just like the bottom of the pit, it turns out to be something so great. And so I can either allow this to be super, super hard and miserable and cry about it every day, or I can just be like, okay, what's on the other side of this, and get through it faster. You know, like I can allow life to beat me upside the face every day, or I can just be like, okay, smile about it, and what's next? And so that's what we've chose to do. And now we're really enjoying it. And last night, I meditate every day. Last night in my meditation, I just realized I live in Florida and Omaha. Like, that's really amazing. Like, a lot of people would like to do that. And I get to do that. You know, it's just really incredible. And I, off camera, we were talking about babies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found out when I was 36 that I couldn't have children. And another bottomless pit that felt really hard. And yet I have three amazing kids who are adopted. And it was not hard to adopt any one of them. You know, people, you hear stories of how hard adoption is. And we have three. And not a single one of them was hard.
Welcome to Rhea Radio, episode 106 with Jerry Schlickburn. Got that one on the first time, yo.
Well, I'd hope so. How long have you known her? Like 20 years?
No.
He still didn't pronounce your name right.
13
years.
When you say that, it makes me like my.
I didn't say Dennis Bertrand.
Than I normally do.
It's Bertrand.
Bertrand.
No, Bertrand.
Bertrand.
No, Bertrand.
Bertrand.
I didn't even know why you even tried.
You're right.
You're listening to Rhea Radio, the nationally trusted name in real estate investing. We dig deep to discover investors' why in real estate. If you want to skip all the BS and get in investors' heads, you're in the right spot. Be one of the thousands to check out RhiaRadio.com. Her last name reminds me of, I think it was Fletch, where she's like, what's your name, sir? And he's like, Mr. Sinelinen. And because there's like so many consonants in their last name. Like, it's just like people keep adding. They're asking him what their name is, and somebody just made something up. It's Schlickburn.
Well, you know, it's kind of like one of their companies is just Schlick Construction. Just keep it.
No, I'm kidding. She's Jerry is so fun. She's been a mainstay in all things real estate investing in Omaha for years and years. And you have known her longer than I have, and I just, like, she's just great. And I feel, part of me feels bad we haven't had her on before now, which she's reminded us of a couple of times. But she did do a couple of guest spots and covered for us.
Yeah, so. She's been on the podcast numerous times as a guest. Guest host, yeah. And I think we even had her on when she presented at the Rhea Group. I think we played one of those episodes back in the day.
Yes.
Maybe. And then and then on the other side of this... I've known Jerry for probably about 13, 14 years. I was there when her husband and her first met. And I've known Mike for quite a long time. But Jerry, if you guys don't know Jerry and haven't heard her speak in person or on our podcast in the past, she owns a property management company. Her and her husband own a property management company. They have a company called Dreamvesting Capital Group. So it's a fundraising group. They have... you know, several hundred units between personal and in their fund. They have a roofing company. They have a rehab construction company. She has a coaching company. And then on the side, they even have in one of their commercial properties, they have a smash room and an escape room. And I'm probably forgetting about something in there. And then I'm partners with her on the real estate company with DBG Realty. So... Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Property management, short-term rental management. Yeah, so. They have pretty much anything you can think of within real estate investing they have some hand in.
And they're now based out of St. Pete, Florida, where they live on the beautiful ocean out there. And they're running their business long distance. One thing, though, that I think is super unique, and I'd love to get your guys' feedback on this, is how the podcast went today and how – it was like, it was the literally Jerry sat down and we just start talking. Never start off with our intro.
Yeah, we didn't have a plan really. It just kind of organically took shape.
Denlis will probably put an intro in there that we record at the end that might work, but literally he's like, "Oh, I'm just going to hit record cuz they're talking so much."
Yeah, but not only that, like the conversation was flowing so well. I was kind of upset that I took so long to press record because there was so much good things that was said before I actually pressed record.
Yeah.
But I just realized that, hey, this is a lot of podcast quality material. Let me just press R and get this going.
Well, the funny part is that at one point, you know, we all sat at the table and decided we want to be more like a radio show.
Right.
You know, instead of like an interview podcast. And I hope you guys feel that too. And this was truly, in my opinion, kind of what I envisioned this being was something that we just brought somebody to the table and just shot the shit.
Mm. It was a lot of diving deep into Jerry's story, personal story, more than her business stuff.
Gets a little emotional here and
there. Oh, yeah, it does. And I mean, for the people that know Ted and Denlis, not so much Owen, but Ted and Denlis, we like emotional stuff.
What am I, heartless? Is that what you're saying? I have feels. I have all the feels. I got emotional a couple episodes ago.
Yes.
We're talking about my family.
And so. that was beautiful.
Did your dad listen to that?
He hasn't said anything yet. Okay. So
it was beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks, I guess. So Jerry is, she's just a fixture in the Omaha community and cut her teeth originally in real estate in the Phoenix market.
Yep.
During short sale time. If any of you don't know what that is, maybe Google it. Or Denlis can link to it in the show notes.
2008 timeframe.
Yeah. So great financial crisis. Short sales were really prevalent then. So banks were taking offers on properties that were underwater. And Jerry was one of the top agents in the Phoenix market for conducting short sales. And she took that experience and brought it to Omaha and leveraged some relationships here. Met her soon-to-be husband during that kind of same time frame, and the rest is history. Now she's operating out of the Sunshine State, left all of us Midwesterners behind here at the cold season that's knocking on our door.
And got into developing. I left that out too. But
yeah, you did.
Yeah, kind of cutting her teeth on the whole new construction build side of the business too.
So wide-ranging episode covering a ton of topics from mindset to investing to brokerage to property management to rentals to short-term rentals to
failures.
Failures galore and successes abound.
Yeah, yep.
So this is probably going to be one of our best episodes.
I think so.
By far, just because the longest.
Yeah, this is kind of like, what's the Stephen King book, The Stand, that he wrote? And it was like 4 books long and 8 VHS tapes. I watched it one time in college.
It's 8 VHS.
Yes, it was. So this is kind of like that, but I think you're going to enjoy every single minute of this thing because she gets, really genuine and emotional and raw and tells some awesome stories and gives great advice and tips and strategy, tactics, you name it. It's all in here.
And full disclosure, if you listen to this, Jerry and I had a deal a long time ago that she would be like our fill-in. So if somebody canceled on us, she was the person that I could call and would help me out no matter what. Now, we've had that happen a handful of times, believe it or not. And when I called on her, she was out of town or had something she couldn't make it. So when she gets into about, hey, there's about time I get on the podcast, that is the reason. It wasn't because
it's her fault, is what you're
saying. She wasn't available when she was supposed to be the helper to come in and fill in. So just an FYI, and this was a planned podcast to bring her in. So she's like, it's about time, I think.
We did mention that she wasn't on any previous episodes. Her husband was on previous episodes.
Yep.
She did do a couple of real estate meetups for the Omaha area.
She had a coaching one that she did where she did like mindset last
year. That was the most recent one, yeah.
Yeah, and she did a great job. If you want to check that one out, it's on our Rhea Radio YouTube channel.
Should we get into today's
Golden Nugget?
Today's Golden Nugget is brought to you by JM Real Estate Capital.
Hi, it's Rob, JM Real Estate Capital. We're the money guys that you need to know for all your real estate investments. Talk to us. We can do what your local bank can't or won't do. We don't have millions. We have trillions with a T, to lend. 844-WE-CLOSE or go online, jmrecapital.com. That's jmrecapital.com. JM Real Estate Capital, smart solutions for the real estate investor.
Today's gold nugget. So this is timely, I think, because we were all sitting here talking before we hit record today about how, you know, it's times have gotten tough in the real estate investing, you know, world, especially for those that have not gotten started yet, or maybe were just getting started when kind of like a couple of their legs got kicked out from under them during the rate hikes. So it's been really difficult to find, you know, rental properties that cash flow and so on and so forth. Like it's tougher times than it was a couple of years ago. I mean, 2 years ago, everybody was complaining about not being able to find deals. That's still the case, and it always will be. But now it's like people can't get stuff to cash flow. So buying rental properties is not as easy as it used to be, especially with banks pulling back on financing and all that. So what I want to bring up today is we have noticed over the last several months that there's been less and less people attending the social events around real estate investing. So whether it's a local meetup, your local RIA, lunches, you know, networking, happy hours, webinars, that kind of stuff, webinars, attendance is down across the board. And I think, you know, part of that reason is a lot of newer people that were considering this as a viable avenue. Now we're saying, yeah, I'm out. It's too tough. And here's my counter to that argument. My gold nugget for today is support your local RIA and meetup groups right now. And when I say support, I just mean attend. Go to it. And this is the time where, to steal a phrase from Jordan Harbinger, dig the well before you get thirsty. When times are hard, this is the time where you should be going out and cementing your foundation of relationships in this business so that you can start stacking things up when times are good or before times are good. So this is the time you get traction, guys. So this is not the time where you're like, I'm going to do something else on Tuesday night. No, you should be going to your local RIA or your local meetup group and networking with people and forming those relationships so that you can then look back on this time right now as something that was pivotal in your career and getting started in real estate investing. Because what are you going to do? Wait until times are great and everybody's in real estate investing? You're going to miss out on all the opportunities that are present right now and, you know, say 2 years from now or whenever it is that it's quote unquote good again.
The richest people didn't get rich during the times that things are the greatest.
Yeah, this is the time. I mean, this is when you cement, you focus on quote unquote operational excellence. Let's say you're not ready to go out to go buy a whole bunch of deals right now. Who cares? Go out and meet all the people that are either A, doing that, or B, are operating businesses that are like what you want to be like. This is the time, you guys. Like, I don't understand why people aren't attending these things. What else are you going to do on, you know, a Tuesday or Wednesday night or whenever your meetups are meeting?
Do you remember when Sam Tevis was in here and he's like, I went to the groups and then I looked for the person that had the most people surrounded around him, and I made sure that I held back. And then those are the people I wanted to get to know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's those types of tips that he said he grew so much, and he knew exactly who he wanted to surround himself with based on just being at the meetups and then focusing on who everybody was talking to.
So, yeah, great point. And to put a bow on this, this is the time. So when everybody looks back on this time, 5 years, 10 years from now, they're going to say, wow, that was a pause in the market. Everybody kind of took a collective breath. But a lot of people are taking their foot off the gas, or they're never even getting in the car, to, you know, coin a phrase here. So go to these. This is the time. Form your relationships. Be ready to go and have your guns loaded when it's time to go hunting. So this is not a time when it's going to pay off for you to be lazy. So do what the successful people are doing and go to these events.
I thought I was going to be the one that was going to go over this in depth, but you really just took it and you had your own mic drop moment there. So congratulations.
Thanks, buddy.
That is a great tip, and I couldn't have said any better. And I'm a firm believer in this. I see it too. I mean, I just, you know, as being one of the fastest growing RIAs the last couple of years, and then just seeing how we had held a luncheon today. Normally our luncheons have 20 to 50 people. I think we had 15 people out there. And we had some players at our luncheon today with great golden nuggets given out, and we had some great discussions about Oxford homes and warehouse space, and people had off-market properties to talk about. But there's only a small handful of people who are taking advantage of that that knowledge that was there.
And I think it's really because, I mean, I know I need to save this for the next one, but I just want to mention it. It really is because people aren't figuring out ways to make things work in this tough market. People just want to continue doing the cookie cutter, what everyone is accustomed doing, going to banks for financing, all these different things. No one is getting creative.
And I'll back that up too, because I mean, even my first couple of years of going to meetups and trying to get investing, I didn't understand hard money and all that stuff out there. And if I had better knowledge of how to use that, and it wasn't just this huge payment, it was actually something I just need to figure into my rehab bids, that I would have been more comfortable starting a lot sooner.
Yeah. So
you didn't know what you didn't know.
Yep.
The only reason you're going to, you know, cure your ignorance is by going out learning from people that have done it before. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you actually get your butt out of the house and go to these things.
And I learned that at the meetups.
Yep. There you go.
There we go. Way before I was running a meetup. So,
all right, let's kick this dead horse aside that we've been beating and get into our podcast today with the world famous Jerry Schlickburn.
Duh. If you love this format, guys, do me a favor, leave us a review and tell us what you think about this. So, awesome.
So I was having coffee with one of Ted's good friends, and he gave Ted credit for the success that he has experienced in business, because he said, I would have no, you know, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am today if it weren't for Ted Kosh. And I said, the biggest thing about Ted is I wish Ted would see himself the way that other people see him. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely 100% agreed with me. And you have no idea how many people say that about you. No, you have no idea, dude. Almost everybody that I talk to says that about you. So, well,
that's why we started a podcast.
Yeah. But no, my point on that is, like, you know, this guy, we'll leave him nameless for now, but he has just recently exited a business and made multiple millions of dollars, and he gave all the credit to where he's at to Ted. Not all of it. Obviously, he did the work, but he would not be where he is without you. And I was just thinking about that. I'm like, that is so freaking cool. Mm-hmm. Because, like, your relationship with him and the fact that you're a good dude led him to such success, and he has not forgotten it. And we talked about how when people go through struggles and rough times, how there's, you know, the people that you think are your friends or your allies, it's amazing how quickly those can go up in smoke.
Oh, yeah.
But the ones that stick around you through the valleys, those are your ride or die, you know, people.
I share a similar story with him. I mean, my story isn't as successful as him, but because of Ted, Ted is the reason I am here today.
Ted's the reason I'm here today.
Ted is the reason why my business is here today. Because when I approached him, he's the one who vouched for me with Jerry and Mike. And that job is what was the seed money for my business. So it's because of Ted is why my business is where it is right now.
What say you, Ted, with all the accolades being avalanched on you today?
he's awkward.
Do you see his face?
Yeah.
Oh, man. He's like wide-eyed right now.
You need to own it. You need to own it, because a lot of our business and success we can attribute to you as well. Even when we were at the Jake and Gino MM6, somebody said to us how they looked up to us and how much you have positively impacted our businesses. And we're very grateful for that as well. And it's funny, because I was thinking, I wonder if Ted is happy about where he is today, because I told him one day I was going to hire him away, and then we did. And I was like, oh, like, there was a different trajectory. And sometimes I know it's hard. And so, you know, and I'm sure sometimes you question it.
I was hired on as the marketing director.
And sales.
Wasn't Denlis the IT guy? Was that you?
That was part of Ted's.
That's his job description. We'll just, how about IT? We'll just roll that into your job responsibility.
Everybody thought, since I had the nightlife company with Kelly back in the day, that I was the IT / web guru, and I knew enough to be dangerous.
I just wanted you because I knew how good you were at sales.
Yeah.
And you can't not know Ted and know that he's good at sales, right? And so, yeah, I was just like, I need a guy like, we need a guy like that, like all around. And so I'm just amazed at what you've
The timing was perfect when that all went down too.
Yeah.
Because at that specific time, I was working at Thrasher Basements and I was traveling every third week. I was gone for a week. We had I think Carson was like three maybe at the time. Mm-hmm. And it got to a point where he's like not, I mentioned this before, but I wasn't getting the attention from him that I was once getting when I was around.
He's like, Dad, Mom, who's that guy in our garage? Yeah. That's your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Jerry made an offer and she's like, hey, I really want you to come work for us. And I'm like, man, I'm making really good money right now. but I'm not home. And so I gave her a number that made sense, where I could pay my bills and it was a significant drop, but it was enough to pay my bills and be home, which was a value there. And it was able to give me the opportunity to step away, and the timing was right. And then, one thing just led to another. And my position changed 27 more times later.
Yeah, it did. Well, that's one thing about having small businesses though, like, you can't just hire an IT guy. You can't just hire a marketing person. You have to be like, look, are you in this with me? Because I'll pay you this amount of money and we just got to do whatever we got to do. But we both did, right?
Well, I remember your exact words. Like, we've never paid any. I think you said, I'm going to pay you more money than I'm paying my whole staff I have on staff right now. And I can't afford that.
No pressure.
But she's like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. But that's the thing. We always, Mike and I, philosophy, we're like, we'll figure it out. We know how to make money. We're hustlers. We'll figure it out. And your best salespeople normally in many companies make more money than anybody else. A lot of times they make more money than the owner. Mm. And so you bring on the right person, it, catapults the rest of your business.
Well, the interesting thing about just the high income, roles out there, generally you're talking about, let's say, a specialized profession like being a doctor, right? So you have that, you have business owner, and then you have high achieving sales professional. Those are generally your three buckets. Can you think of any other ones that are maybe applicable? But like that, when I think of like people that have, a lot of income earning potential over the lifetime of their career, those are the three that I think of. And so those are, you have to look at, if you're in sales, right? Sales is kind of a burnout job, but you always have some type of sales skills that you take with you no matter what you pursue.
It's a burnout if you don't love what you're doing.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I love doing sales. I feel like I could go into about any sales job and really enjoy what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I think the key is, though, you got to believe in your product or your service that you're selling.
I made a point that every company I did sales for was the best in the industry that they were worked in. If it was car audio, doing mechanic sales, I've done that before, and I've done home audio sales, and I've done so on, car sales, real estate sales, whatever I was in, I made sure that category was the number one person in that industry.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, there's kind of a BS meter that people have. If you don't believe in what you're telling them, it comes through immediately. Like, totally. People, you can't look somebody in the eyes if you don't believe what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And if you do believe it, it's really hard for somebody to say no to you unless they have some compelling reason not to.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know what I'm saying?
I do. Because when I did car sales, I worked at Mazda. And at the time, Jessica had my wife had a Mazda, and it was a great running car. And I was believing it. So they actually said, I had a Lincoln too, but that place was full. And they said, nope, we're gonna put you a Mazda. And I went there, and we were the only people that had Mazda prior to working at that dealership. And that year, I mean, I think 8 months of those 12 months, I was a top salesman in our store. And I think I actually won an award for being the top or the number two most knowledgeable Mazda sales rep in the country.
Wow.
So I got to hang out with the CEO, go race the cars, go hang out there, go to Texas with them.
Did you have any thoughts of doing a Tonya Harding on the number one guy or gal?
They didn't deserve that number one because I was in the competition with
them.
That's
what I thought. Yeah. So you're still a little resentful. I can see it in your eyes.
I should have had that first place trophy.
Denless, who Tonya Harding is?
So many cool things.
So Tonya Harding was famous, I think, in the 80s or 90s. Yeah. She, there was one of the top ranked Olympic skaters of all time was Nancy Kerrigan. And Tonya Harding was like a close fact check me on this. This close has been a while second. Ago.
Yep.
Yeah, she was a close second. And so she actually, what did she do? She like.
She paid a guy.
She paid a guy to come and break Nancy Kerrigan's knees or ankles or something like that.
Like. Yeah,
right before the Olympics.
Hit her with the
right before the Olympics, because she wanted to, hit her with a bat. Like,
yeah,
you should see his face right now. This is
you should watch the movie. There's a movie on it.
What's her name? Did it? Margot Robbie? Wasn't she the Tonya Harding?
I don't even remember.
Anyway, point being, it's a thing. Yeah. Nice. So Ted is Tonya Harding of of the car sales industry.
He didn't do that. I always think it's interesting how many people have an aversion towards sales. You know, because like you said, it's a skill that can create you a lot of money, but you're always selling yourself, you know, always. If you have a spouse, you sold yourself to somebody, right?
Well, speaking of sales, when you were in Arizona, like you're originally from small town Nebraska, right?
Yes.
What town?
Small town. Binkelman.
Binkelman. And
what?
Where? Shush. What? Where's
how many people were in it?
Binkelman. When I lived there, 1,002, and now there's like 900. I don't know.
500.
They're dying off.
They're dying off.
Oh my gosh.
But
it's very southwest corner of Nebraska. So it's like 15 miles from Colorado and 2 miles from Kansas.
That's even smaller than my hometown.
Like
mine is
literally,
1,200 people.
I lived in BFE. Literally. The next biggest town was 45 minutes away, McCook, which is 8,000 people. I've been to McCook. Was the big city for me growing up.
So,
wow.
At what age did you decide to move to Arizona, though?
I moved to Arizona when I was 25.
I mean, what's the sales job that you decided to do in Arizona?
I sold timeshares.
Oh my God. Oh.
I did. Okay, so this is how naive I was. Small town girl from Nebraska. I had never heard of timeshare before. Never. I mean, I was out of college at this point, and I had a job. After college, I got a job traveling with a meeting planner. So it was a company that did meeting planning for Fortune 500 companies. So like the trip you went on where you got to drive the car, there's a company that plans that. And then they send people to make sure it goes smoothly on the ground. And so I got to travel all over the world and stay in amazing places and go on a safari, like amazing stuff. And then decided it was time to settle down a little bit. I was ready for a plant and a cat, you know, like I wanted like
25 times ticking. I got to get me a plant.
That's why I meet these 20-year-olds these days. And I'm like, I was nowhere near in the mentality that you are now.
No, I wasn't either.
Been a good run. Better get me a hydrangea or
snake plant.
We can't even keep our two plants in the
we have two succulents in there. Arguably the most resilient plants in the world.
And they're dead. I noticed that.
They're on life support.
I'll take them home and fix them for you.
They were beautiful until Owen dropped them.
That's true.
So
R.I.P.
So I was home for like two days out of 6 months, and it was like traveling like Germany, California, Florida, like you lose your internal clock. Like
if someone said it's time to sleep,
I'd be like, well, I can do that right now. Of like regularity.
She's like, I just really wanted a cat skeleton. So
I wanted some regularity. I wanted some consistency in my life. And taking care of a plant and a cat requires that. I had big dreams when I was 25, okay?
Got it.
Big dreams. And so...
You're like, when I get older, I'm going to have 3 dogs.
I don't plan things out very well, as you'll hear probably through the rest of this podcast. Like, even I was like, Ted, can I be on your podcast finally? Like, I don't know what I want to talk about. Let's just wing it.
Specifically, she goes, you never asked me. And I go, are you kidding me? I go, I've asked you probably half a dozen times, but you're just never available or in town.
I like to give you help. I like to give you shit.
Your name has been on the top of the list for a very long time.
I know. I saw it at the top. Like, ooh.
This was not staged. Like, you actually have been up there forever now. It probably won't erase. Now, you're in town.
I'm going to tell this story.
Okay, tell it.
So I knew I was going to move to Arizona. My dad had lived there. My boyfriend at the time had moved there. And so I was like, what can I do for work? Because I'm not a specialist. I never knew I wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer. I wanted to do all the things and, you know, learn all the things. And so I Googled travel and real estate.
Was Google around?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that.
Whatever we did back then. It was 2000.
It was Alta Vista. Or ask Jeeves.
Yeah, probably.
Ted doesn't know what that is.
It was Jeeves. In 2000, whatever we had then. And I did real estate and travel, and timeshare kept coming up, and I was like, oh, I can get paid for this. I still had no idea what it was. Set up some interviews because I came from a sales background. I had a really great job in college as a government contractor doing sales, and I got to travel all around the country for that job, which was fun. But I went on an interview, and they were like, yeah, we'll hire you, and I needed a job to justify moving there, I guess. And so I'd sold timeshare for less than a year because I was terrible at it. I was way too honest for that industry. Sorry if that's what you do. But
for those people who don't know what timeshare is, what is timeshare?
So timeshare is where a company will AKA sell demos. Like a... So it's actually one of the most profitable ways to be the developer of real estate. Okay. You take a property like a hotel and you break it up into, it used to be weeks, now it's days, now it's even points, which are arbitrary.
Hourly.
And you sell the real estate by the unit. So In my case, it was by the week. And so you have 52 owners of one unit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not cheap. Like I at the time bought one of the cheapest ones and it was $10,000. So it's very, very lucrative for the developer. People feel like it's a little shady because it's not as easy to use as they say. You don't just pay the $10,000, you pay a maintenance fee every year. And so you're paying, you know, for your vacation.
And they're impossible to get out of.
Well, there's some companies. I sold mine and it cost me $3,000.
Don't use your Jedi mind tricks on our listeners, okay?
No, but I had to pay to sell it. I had to pay $3,000 and then I got out of it. But yeah, they're hard to get out of. If you travel a lot, like some of them can make sense. But if you don't travel a lot and they sell it like, oh, if you buy this, you're going to go on vacations. And if that's not your habit, it's still not going to be your habit. And then you're going to have this expense on top of it.
Yeah.
And so that's why they're kind of bad. But the great thing about timeshare sales for me personally was the sales training. Like got every morning before we started, we did 30 minutes of sales training. And like, granted, some of the best salespeople just flat lied, you know, in that industry. But that wasn't what we were taught. You know, we were taught like really good sales skills. And still to this day, I feel like I could go into any sales market and be one of the top salespeople because really, really great at that. That's a whole nother story. So in not every state, but every state is different if you have to have your real estate license or not. But in Arizona, you have to have a real estate license to sell timeshares. So that's how I got my real estate license.
Oh, okay. It's all coming full circle now.
My dad is a developer. And so
he sold you the timeshare?
No. No, he did commercial. I shouldn't say developer. He's a commercial general contractor on a large scale. But because of his interest in that, I looked into real estate in college and just, you know, I didn't really have the time in college to get my real estate license and focus on that. So I fell into it. And then after I realized I was terrible at timeshares, what was the next best thing to do? You know, sell real estate. So I became a buyer's agent on a real estate team and
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
I feel like timeshares are kind of like, you know how you have streaming services and a whole bunch of like probably websites that you signed up at one point for a subscription that you don't even remember or use anymore. Yeah. And I think there's an app now. I don't remember what it's called, but it'll like look at all of your stuff and figure out what are all the subscriptions that you're getting debited each month. Because they're, you know, it's like out of sight, out of mind. And then you're like, oh, man. Yeah, we forgot to use the timeshare this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like a recurring subscription fee that you get, kind of like Hulu or Netflix. And you're like, did I even use that in the last two months, 6 months, year? Whatever. That's what it is. I want to give a quick story. So Jen and I, when we first started dating, I gave this like grand gesture and I was like, let's go to Cabo. And I had no idea what I was doing. Booked this trip to Cabo. We go there and it was fun as hell. Like it was a great trip, but I was like, you know, trying to wine and dine her, and we end up, and I'm like, listen, I've heard bad things about timeshares. Let's just, our whole goal here is just avoid people selling timeshares. Okay. We were warned about this. Let's just be smart. Okay. We're smart people. And then we're walking around kind of like, you know, a shopping area, probably Touristville or whatever. And we meet this American girl that's there. She's, I don't know, or like early mid 20s, probably. It was, might have been you, actually, now that I think about this. So we're there and we start talking to this and we're like, oh yeah, have you been here before? And she was super friendly and she was like, oh yeah, you know, I come here every blah, blah, blah. And then like, the next thing you know, and I'm like, I'm pretty good at telling people no generally. Like I'm kind of a dick. Like Jen just looks to me to tell people no. That's like my role when somebody's soliciting whatever, you know, for whatever they're selling. And I'm like, I got this. Okay. But next thing you know, we're sitting in a room full of like a whole bunch of people with like a 3-ring binder in front of us. And I'm like, And they were so good.
Yeah.
I mean, we were like an hour into this thing and I'm like, what is going on? Wait a minute. Where am I? It was like coming to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, this is a timeshare presentation. We were warned about this. And we just like, you know, tried to get out of there as fast as we could. But yeah, it was like super awkward. And they make it hard. So they're like, look, you don't have to buy anything. Seriously. They look you in the eyes. You're like, you don't have to buy anything. Just sit here. It's totally worth it.
And we'll give you a free massage afterwards.
Yeah, you get like, here's some free drink tickets and like some Scooby snacks. And then like, you're like, what just happened? You feel like you got roofied. You know what I mean? You wake up 3 hours later with some timeshare coupons in your hand and you're like, where am I? I guess we're going to Mexico for the rest of our lives. Once every 3 years, you know?
So just recently, Mike and I bought a timeshare in we did. I thought I would never do this.
You're not even immune to it.
No. So at a Bass Pro Shop, we take our kids there because they think it's Santa's workshop. They still don't know that that's not true. And so
they're like, the North Pole is 20 minutes away. I don't know what you kids are talking about.
Their Santa is so good, you guys. So
he really is. I've taken my kids
so
there
good.
Too. Yeah,
so good. And so this lady, you know, they sell the Bass Pro Shop owns a timeshare in Branson, right outside of Branson. And this lady's like, oh, let me sign you up. And I'm like, lady, look, I used to sell these. We're not doing it, you know. And then she's like, well, you can go for 3 days and stay in our timeshare. And we're like, okay, fuck it. Right? And so, yeah, we'll do it. So we go, and this place is awesome. So this resort is like the number two
Big Cedar
timeshare
Lodge
resort. Yeah.
Oh my God, so
in
amazing.
The country, it's so amazing. Like you should honestly go to a timeshare presentation to stay at the place. It's so good. So we fell in love
with
it.
She can't turn it off. She's still selling timeshares, you guys.
It's like, crazy.
Timeshares for life, yo.
Yeah. I'm going to create that. No, and that's my next business venture now. So we go on this presentation and like it's at the end. So we already love the resort. So we buy the lowest one. Yeah. Every year, though, like every quarter.
How much did you pay for the lowest one?
Like $10,000 again. Like
Netflix, okay. Hulu, Big Cedar Lodge, $10,000. Wait a minute. What is it? Oh, yeah. That's
well,
a good one.
You don't pay it
we
every
keep
year.
That.
Okay. So what they do is they call us every quarter and they're like, come, because they want to try to upsell you more points. And so we go there for free a few times a year. And I'm the one in our relationship that says no. But we haven't actually used the timeshare. We just use the free days to go and sit in on the presentation every few times a year. And they give us the nicest rooms because they're trying to get us. We've already bought once, so they're trying to get us to buy more of it. Now the old Jerry has kicked back in and I'm like, I'm not buying. We're not buying. waste so, your time or not. Like,
so maybe you can do sales for this new windmill place they're opening up down there.
Yeah, I've heard good things.
Yeah, I heard they're going to have the shadiest timeshare in town.
Don't pay attention to the 2.6 star review. But that was before. That was when they were operating as a hotel.
It's a whole new business.
What's funny about this so far is that this is more from an I Love Ted gratitude episode to like
into timeshares.
This is like a warning against buying timeshares, or maybe an endorsement, according to you, salesperson of the year.
You have to love to travel.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my warning. If you don't travel now, don't buy a timeshare.
Okay, speaking of travels, let's recap real quick. You are back in town after like moving all the way across the country, about as far away as you can get away from us. And like you're on kind of a whirlwind tour, is that right? Like, are you what you no. just spoke at the Lincoln meetup, or you're going
no,
to?
No, they booked me in November, but they double booked me, so I got kicked. I got booted.
What?
Yeah. So
who'd you get booted for?
I don't know. They better be good.
They better be real good.
So I'll be doing another one December, January, February. So no.
No.
No whirlwind tour. Do you want the whole story?
Yeah, let's get it.
This is a failing forward. I might cry. Oh,
okay.
Has anyone cried on your podcast yet?
Yeah.
Ted.
Yeah.
Just Ted.
Jay Cathell cried when he was talking about the eulogy part. You remember?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, Jay. We're bringing it up again.
That's probably why he's like our sixth or seventh best listened to podcast.
Yeah, the raw emotions of Jay Cathell, just bringing everybody in.
The emotions is what gets people. So that's go away.
That's why I try to go so deep with people.
This is why we have the new lighting in here. It's to capture all the,
tears
running down Ted's face when you're telling your sad story.
Okay.
All right, let's hear it.
Okay, well.
Lean in, people.
2 years ago in November, so literally like November 15th, we bought a house in Florida. And Paulina and Andy, who Ted bought the Rhea from, moved to St. Petersburg. And when they moved,
Russia?
Florida. Okay. I always forget that.
Worldwide podcast. I don't know if you know this.
So how many languages are we translated into?
11.
Okay.
Please continue.
So Mike had told them that his dream was to find a house that he could drive a boat up to. And of course, it had to need work because we don't buy anything that doesn't need work. And 6 months later, they call and they're like, we found Mike's house. And I was like, great. We aren't in a position to buy a house down there that needs work right now. And they were like, no, you really need to see it. It's a special house. It had only had two owners. It was built in like 1952 by the developer of Reddington Beach. And only two owners. And it had not been like touched, basically. It was a time capsule. And right on the bay, it has this beautiful view, nature preserve on both sides. And then like you see the John's Pass where the bridge opens up and the boats go in and out from there. It's really cool.
I have been to Reddington Beach and like we love that area. Yeah. John's Pass, like been there multiple times. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. You'll have to come stay with us. We'd love to have you guys come visit. So anyway...
Timeshare?
No.
Oh,
Airbnb.
Okay.
We have a lock-off suite, but for you, free.
Oh,
for you. Wow. Free for you, Owen.
We can have 52 owners of that lock-off suite.
Not you, Ted. Not
you're
you.
Giving me an idea here. Timeshare forever. I'm going to timeshare my lock-off. Thanks, Owen.
You're welcome.
You know I like to start businesses. So anyway.
I'll take 25% of that.
Saw the property. It was amazing. It needed a big renovation. And we, you know, one of the things that I pride ourselves, Mike and I, in is being creative in real estate. Like that's one of the ways to make money in real estate is figuring out how to make something work. Like there's always a way to make something work. And so we put together the rehab budget and we had, you know, just in talking about it, had some other friends who said they would be interested in going in on it with us. And so we bought it all together. And
how many people were involved in that deal?
Well, there was two other couples and then a business partner couple. So six other people.
Got it.
In addition to Mike and I. And so we, you know, started the project, we had no idea that basically that all of Florida, I think, but that area specifically is like an island, like island time. The contractors show up when they want to,
It's Trinidad. Dentless is nodding aggressively this
Dentless
whole time.
Is like, yeah, I'm on.
If they work a 3-hour day, that's a pretty long day. Like it, we had no idea. And I'll be honest, like Mike would go down there and he would come back and be like, I can't, like, you know, like Mike can build. Mike is licensed and qualified to build a skyscraper, and we've flipped 300 some houses. You know, like. He would come back and be like, I cannot get somebody to work down there. I don't know what to do. They tell me they're there. They're not there. Like, it was really crazy. I honestly was like, you're making excuses. You are making excuses. This is ridiculous. There's no way that you can't make this happen. Until I went down there and experienced it with him. And it is next level. Like, the people will have an hour conversation with you, look you right in the eye, tell you all about their kids. I'll be here on Monday. Monday comes and goes. They don't show. They don't answer. No text. They might show up 2 weeks later and bang it out in one day, or work for 3 hours and then not come again for a month.
And then want more money on an advance or whatever.
Uh-huh. And the day they show up, the day they finish, they want paid that second, even if you didn't know they were coming. What in Nebraska, this project would have taken us 6 months, 9 months on a bad day. And here we were a year and 6 months, basically. And our other partners, understandably, were pissed because they were depending on Mike to get this done. And in addition to other big projects we had that had problems after COVID, you know, we were frantically working on that. This house wasn't getting done. And so our partners basically came and said, we want our money back. And Mike and I had signed on the loan and they had helped. You know, we each put an equal amount of money. We never go back to our people and ask for more money. We did ask, I think, each of them for $5,000 or $10,000, right, kind of up front. But over the course, Mike and I had been putting more money in because we didn't want to go ask them for more money.
Sure.
And we felt the burden of it, and we knew they were mad, and it was understandable. They didn't want to get to the point where they had to put more money in, and we were getting there because this house was 1.3, I think we bought it for, $500,000 renovation. And so the monthly interest payments are high, right? And so we ended up, you know, making a really hard decision. What are we going to do? Sell this house that isn't completely finished? We'll probably all lose money if we do that. Or we have real estate. Thank God we are real estate investors on a bigger level. So we had stuff that we could possibly sell. We sold a sixplex, which was almost exactly the money we needed to buy them out. So, you know, we paid them back. Unfortunately, they only got paid back what they put in, but they didn't lose anything, but they didn't gain either. And that was hard for us, and I'm sure hard for them. But they were happy to be paid back. And then we had started Airbnb-ing the basement of our big house that we owned north of Council Bluffs, because we weren't going to be there. We had to go finish this house. By this point, we had a construction loan that was a year, thinking that would be
plenty of time.
Yeah. Yep. And then here we'd renewed it twice at this point. We had a hole in the ground of a pool since February. Couldn't get the pool contractor to finish it. We had to go get it finished.
Plotline issues.
Oh, God. So the city-county line goes right through our backyard. And so even getting a permit for the pool took about 9 months because neither one of them wanted to permit it. Finally, we got the county attorney involved. And he worked it out so that we had to abide by city guidelines, but the county would give us the permit. And so it was such a process. But Mike basically said, we need to go down there. May, June, like we thought we would be done at the end of May. We thought we'd be done at the end of June. We thought we'd be done at the end of July. So we rented our house, the basement part, which did amazingly. I didn't know how a big house out in the country in Council Bluffs would rent. Like, no one could give you that answer, right?
And yeah, we thought, there's nothing to base it on. Like, you have no idea.
So we thought, well, we'll just figure it out. So Mike literally took the girls, and I stayed behind with Caleb and Misty, and we got the basement of our house ready to rent in like a few, well, it took a couple weeks, I guess. I put it on Airbnb, and it started renting right away. And our fourth guest was this family with six kids, and their five-year-old had started their house on fire.
Oh.
And
that's not who I want in my house.
I didn't tell Mike. Well, it turns out that they were friends of all of our friends in Council Bluffs, and we just never had met them. And so, like, all of our friends from Council Bluffs started, like, messaging me, like, oh my gosh, it's so great that you can help these guys out. And I was like, who are they? So I had a conversation with the mom, and I said, look, we're going to have to be in Florida the whole summer. And so I'm going to fly home and get the upstairs of our house ready so that I don't have to cancel bookings and you can just stay there. And then when we come home, we'll just live in the basement. And then you guys don't, you have a place you can stay all summer. And their insurance paid a good amount of rent. So we did really good on the house throughout the summer. But it was literally from April until the end of September has been me moving and packing and getting houses ready for Airbnb or to sell or whatever. So that house, the big house here, was renting on Airbnb. And then, you know, we set up the Florida house thinking that we were going to rent it as an Airbnb. And then we're thinking, well, if the Omaha house goes well, maybe we can go back and forth. But it's a big house, and we were quickly running out of money because the house in Florida was just a money pit.
Feeding the machine, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, it was like, do we walk away from this and cut our losses, or do we just make it work? And like I said earlier, we're the make it work kind of people. Like, we're hustlers. So all of May, June, July was us literally 8 a.m. until midnight just working on this house every day, all day. Our poor kids, you know, just had no pool to swim in. They were basically on their iPads all day, every day. And then we would try to go to the beach for an hour at night, a couple nights a week, to make it anywhere enjoyable for them. And we came back around the 4th of July. Here it comes, I told you. We came back around the 4th of July, and we were both like worried about what was the right decision for our family and financially and our businesses. And I wasn't going to make the decision on what we did. I needed Mike to make that decision. And at this point, honestly, we were kind of loving Florida. The people are so nice there. It's beautiful, obviously. The house, we were building it like with our own hands at this point, and so there was a lot of love and stuff going into it, and just like our style. And we came over the hill to our house, and Mike started got teary because he, you know, this, like, the house that we had is like a house that most people would never move from. You know, it's like something that you work your whole life for, and then your kids come home to it. But honestly, you know, we had to look at ourselves, and we're like, we travel all the time. We want our kids to have a different experience of life. We homeschool because we want that. Like, that's the lifestyle we want. We want to be able to be like, we're going to go live in Trinidad, or we're going to go on vacation to where, you know, wherever, whenever we want to. Like, we were like, do we really want this house? Are we really the people who are going to be the grandparents that the kids come back to the house they grew up in? No, we're not that. We're not, you know, we want something different. And so the next day he came home from work and he goes, I decided we're selling it. And I was like, okay, all right, this is what we're doing. This is our next adventure. And so, sorry. I had to get the house ready because Mike is a he's not so much now, but he's attached to things. Like if you said, Mike, you can have this piece of paper for free, he would literally take it because it's free. And you know, he's in construction, so every board or leftover tile, he's like, we can use this one day, right? So we had all this stuff. And so I sent him back to Florida after the time we had planned to be in Omaha. And I worked on the house, and I had to get it ready. And like, what are we keeping for Schlick Construction, and where are we keeping it? And and the guys came out to help me, and I had to go through. And, you know, our house was almost 7,000 square feet. And you don't really, I was like, I have gotten the basement ready for Airbnb, the main floor ready for Airbnb. What could be left? And there was so much stuff that I had to go through. It was so much. And
well, that barn alone had been full.
Oh my God. It was chock full. And I mean, keep in mind, I had already done, you know, I had done this for Airbnb. I had to get the sixplex ready and have a sale there. You know, I literally became like a garage sale queen, and like, it was interesting, but it was also fun because normally I'm working on a computer, running numbers, things like that. And then here I was like actually getting my hands dirty. And so it was interesting, but it was just like a lot of moving around of our kids and stuff. And we got back to Florida, got a few last minute things done at our house, and it wasn't perfect, but I had to list it. I mean, I had to, because you get into the winter. So our house, you know, if it was in West Omaha, probably would have sold for $2 million. It was 20 acres, just, you know, it was a unique property. We had fishing ponds and stuff. In the Southwest Iowa MLS, the highest sale in the last 3 years was like $1 million. You know, there was a few houses listed at 1.2, 1.3. I listed it at 1.6, and I was like, well, we'll just see what happens. And I got a handful of showings pretty quickly, which was surprising. I didn't know what to expect. And it turned out the first people that saw it were the people that ended up buying it. And they played 1.4, which was amazing. And it closed September 15th, which was like, it couldn't have, like, I listed it the end of July and it closed September 15th. Which is crazy for that kind of property, you know? I mean, it just was like, we were just seeing like, okay, this is clearly what God wants us to do. Like, this is the plan. And so even if we don't understand it, or even if it feels hard and emotional and scary, like, we need to do it because things are just falling into place. The house in Florida, the only lender that we could find to do it, needed two appraisals, and one came in low. So we had to put most of the proceeds from the house on the house in Florida. And but we were able to do that. Like, almost exactly the amount we needed was what that house sold for. And so we didn't walk out of it with a lot of extra money, unfortunately, but we were able to do it. And so we moved to Florida. We also moved. Now, I told you our house is almost 7,000 square feet. The house in Florida is just under 3,000 square feet. So it's a lot smaller, but it also fits us better. Like, we didn't use 3/4 of the big house, you know.
It's a lot easier to clean that way.
Yeah, yeah. So we have, we also moved into one of our townhomes in 10 Square, you know, 46, like Saddle Creek and Dodge, basically. Which is probably another failing forward we can talk about. But we furnished a townhome there. So when we come back, which our plan is to be back here a week, a month, because we have our businesses here. We love Omaha. And so we furnished a unit there, and we Airbnb it when we're not there. And we just started doing that. And we had originally set up the house in Florida to be an Airbnb. So we furnished it pretty much. And then sold our house afterwards, you know? And so we sold a lot of stuff. We left a lot of stuff for the new buyers as well. And now it's a beautiful house that is, you know, our house that we built together. And it was a huge pivot for us. But we also feel, like I said, like, this is God's plan. Like, things just keep lining up. And so for me, I have always had a major major amount of anxiety. Like I just have a lot of anxiety.
Just in general.
In general, especially around money, which isn't good. It's hard to create money when you have that sort of relationship with money. I've done a good job considering, you know, but I do. And so this summer broke me, like, which is why I'm still emotional about it, because it was really hard, like really hard to be like, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to basically put a ton of money into this, sell some assets, like, and, you know, how are we going to make this happen? How are we going to get this damn pool done? You know, it had to get done because our loan, we couldn't extend it again. Every time we extended this construction loan, because it was like a private money loan, not hard money, but private money, it cost us like $10,000 to $20,000 to extend it every time. Yeah. And we were running out of money. We couldn't do that. And nor would we, why would you want to? And so when I was younger, had a couple panic attacks, which is, you know, you guys know I'm all about mindset and healing and growth, and that's where it stems from. This summer I had two panic attacks, like full blown. I thought I was like gonna pass out.
Can you describe what that's like? Like what I don't know it. That I've ever had one, but I possibly have. But I know there's different varying levels of it, but what does it feel like? Do you know what's coming on? Like maybe can you describe that if
so
you wouldn't
mind?
So for
me, I start getting really anxious, like really anxiety. I start yelling at the kids. I'm yelling at Mike and it's,
so
it's
non-specific.
It's usually like, so I have anxiety all summer because of all these things not happening. And then there's like a trigger. Right. And then I just go, like, for me, it's almost like a tornado in my brain. And then it's like, I can only breathe from here. You know, like I'm not breathing.
Like short, shallow breaths.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, your heart races and some people can pass out from it. Since we're being emotional today, I have a abuse from a babysitter as a young child. And so I have I have different coping mechanisms than adults who didn't have that experience, those kind of experiences. And so I can like kind of separate, not completely, but I can like find myself sitting somewhere and I don't know what I was thinking about for the last 10 minutes. Like I'm just kind of gone.
Is it kind of like when you're driving and then you look up and you're like, oh, I'm here. Like I don't remember the last 10 or 15 minutes.
That part of it, but not the rest of it. You wouldn't want to be driving having a panic attack. Right. You would need to pull
over.
That's
fair. Yeah.
You know? And so it was really, really rough. But also the rough, when you go through something rough, like when I'm coaching people through this, because those who, you have to be there in order to like be on the other side in order to coach somebody through things.
It's
and
like
so,
believing what you're selling.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's getting back to that.
So, like, yeah. And so when I coach people on it, you know, you can't have that massive amount of anxiety around money and create $1 billion. You know, it's money is an energy, right? There's a flow to it. There's a cycle to it. And if you have this block because you have so much anxiety about it, it can't flow there. It like gets stuck. And so for me, this was a huge release of that. So now it was kind of what I needed. Like mm-hmm. Now I have this, like, I don't have the same level of anxiety. When, you know, it was like a level up, I guess, in a way, like it would take something really much bigger. I thought this was big. You always think it's big when you're going through it, you know, and someone else who's been through it can see the other side of it. And so now I don't have that massive level, and I have this way bigger level of trust in God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, just like you're my path, you know, just like I thought it was big before. Denlis and I have talked about this before. I thought it was big before, and now it's even way bigger. And so, you know, it's turned out to be good. It's turned out to be good.
You re-embedded yourself.
I did. And I also feel like in a way that this was part of the reason we're supposed to be there, because now we have the opportunity to say, who do we want to be? What do we want to do next? And like for Mike, he's doing bigger apartment buildings. You know, he's in Kearney today looking at doing some inspections on a building that we're under contract. You know, it's 103 units, I think, with development opportunity. And that'll be our biggest project that we've done so far. And he's really excited about that. For me, I'm creating a coaching program that I'm really excited about that will be coming out. And I don't think that I would do that here because, you know, if I was here, I was at the office or homeschooling the kids, and now I don't have an office to go to. And I hired a tutor to help me with the homeschooling. So that's my next adventure, which I'm excited about.
But you had a coaching program here.
Yeah. So this one is just going to be, instead of local to Omaha, it's going to be nationwide. So we've hired a marketing company that is specific for coaching, and they're crafting the message and the marketing for it. So hopefully within about 3 months, we'll be coming out with that. Nice. So I actually wanted to tie a concept that I like to coach on into my story, and it actually ties into pregnancy as well.
Okay.
But one thing that I've learned throughout my life is that, like, what you think, you create. Everyone knows that concept. Like, however we think is what we tend to see in our life, whether we're negative or positive. And so I have so many examples over my life, but, you know, I could choose to look at that story that I just shared with you about moving to Florida as, we had no choice, we have no money. Or I could remember that throughout the whole time and before, Mike wanted to live in Florida. Throughout the whole process of the house, we fell in love with it. And we kept saying, well, maybe one day our partners will want to sell and we'll be able to just move here. Not thinking now, thinking in the future, but, you know, we kept thinking those. And so there was a time where we said, this is really hard. This is a really hard decision. And we wanted this.
So this is like your words.
We created this.
This is like your words of affirmation.
Yeah.
Yeah. The things that you tell yourself over and over in the mirror every morning.
Yeah.
But you guys are doing it to each other.
Yeah.
And then yeah. It came to fruition.
And we had to say, we could either say we had to, or we, you know, manifesting is a buzzword today. We manifested this.
It's probably a better word than affirmations.
And, you know, but both are true, but which one do we choose to look at? And so we choose to look at, we manifested this. Mm. We created this. We wanted this. And now we have this. And while the other was also true and it was hard, here we are. And so but Mike and I have both been through a lot of hard things in our life, me more than him. You know, I said at one point, every time I'm facing something that seems like so hard and like, you know, just like the bottom of the pit, it turns out to be something so great. And so I can either allow this to be super, super hard and miserable and cry about it every day, or I can just be like, okay, what's on the other side of this and get through it faster? You know, like I can allow life to beat me upside the face every day, or I can just be like, okay, smile about it and what's next? And so that's what we've chose to do. And now we're really enjoying it. And last night I meditate every day. Last night in my meditation, I just realized I live in Florida and Omaha. Like that's really amazing. Like a lot of people would like to do that. And I get to do that. You know, it's just really incredible. And I, off camera, we were talking about babies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found out when I was 36 that I couldn't have children. And another bottomless pit that felt really hard. And yet I have three amazing kids who are adopted. And it was not hard to adopt any one of them. You know, you hear stories of how hard adoption is. And we have three, and not a single one of them was hard. And
the first
took a
two
long
were
process.
real blessing in how it happened. Too.
Yeah. I met their birth mom through a class I'd had at church back then. And 2 months later, she texted me out of the blue and asked if we'd be interested in adopting. And Maya was due a month later, which was Mike and I's first anniversary. She was due on our first anniversary. And so she was our first. And you know, it's such a blessing. Like, we talked about what I did in Arizona, but I came to Omaha because, you know, the market crashed in Arizona and I had to learn how to do short sales. So we were, my team and I were always in the top five of our office of 550 some agents. And yet we were very much paycheck to paycheck at the time because it, you know, the bottom fell out in Arizona. When the market goes to 40% of what it was at the height, you can imagine it was a very difficult market. We don't experience that level of change here in Nebraska.
Are you getting those fears right now?
Yeah.
Because I just heard a stat the other day that there's more credit card debt in the country
than any time in history.
Didn't we just pass the $1 trillion mark or something crazy?
I don't know the volume on it, but yeah, that's it's crept up a lot, especially in the last 12 months, to a point where it's unprecedented.
It's not going to change, though. I mean, even if we have a market correction, that's not going to change consumer debt, because if you look at anything, the younger generations today don't care what it costs. They just care if they can afford the payment. I mean, I was talking with somebody yesterday about boats. You know, we're boaters. I grew up boating and water skiing, and we always had a boat. And today, a wakeboard boat costs $150,000 on the low side, $150,000 for a boat. And, you know, people aren't dropping cash on that. You know, they're making payments on something that they use, you know, on a good summer, 30 times a summer.
That's why you should just get a really nice Mustang.
But it's crazy. But that's their mentality. You know, a lot of the younger generation aren't necessarily even buying houses. They're not as tied down. They're doing business differently. You know, a lot of them don't have the traditional jobs like what we grew up with. They're doing stuff on the internet. They're traveling.
It reminds me of that guy that you hired. We'll leave him nameless. And then while he's an intern, he gave you a presentation why you guys should step down. You should be the CEO of the company.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, I was in a thread that I happened to get into accidentally on a reel, and it was, you know, social media has, we talked about this a little bit beforehand, but, you know, there's an algorithm out there. So the social media sites that feed you content measure what you spend your eyeball time, right? So how much you're watching things, they monitor that. They monitor which reels you click on and so forth. So you kept getting feed. You get fed the same stuff that you're watching, or at least related stuff. And that's, you know, I guess good for them, not good for generally people's mental health and so on. And so people that I think, and I'm going to go out a little bit on a limb here, but people that are in the real estate investing world that are wanting to be high performers, or maybe are high performers and are consuming content related to like podcasts about investing and YouTube channels about investing. And like you tend to gravitate toward the same people. You end up kind of in the same spot, right? And it's motivational, and it's like, here's the things you do to become more successful and wealthy and how you become a better person and so on and so on. I clicked on something, and I don't even remember what it was, but I looked into the comments, and it was related to basically housing in some flavor, right? And the comments were just filled with people that were just like bashing real estate investors and landlords, and like, I mean, it was just hate filled. I mean, there was endless comments to this thing, like hundreds and hundreds of them. And I'm just like, and I was reading through them, and every part of me wanted to just click reply on all of them, be like, you don't know what you're saying. Like, you don't understand. Like, ignorance is bliss in a lot of cases. But when you take ignorance and you couple that with being a keyboard warrior, like, that's driving a lot of dissent with everybody that's on social media, right? Like, but I just stopped myself because I'm like, what is the point of this? But right. I went down kind of the rabbit hole, and I was just like looking through people's comments, and I'm like, we are so, in general, uneducated about actually how society and money and the economy and everything else works. It is, it's astounding.
Yeah.
Where people just make blanket statements about things, and they put them, they say, you are over here if you are a landlord. You are, evil and you are only out for profit and you're only greedy and like there's you're just labeled, right? Where it's like, no, dude, like there's single moms that are landlords, right? Mm-hmm. Are you saying they're evil? Like they're just like you. They just happen to have picked up Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Yeah. Or whatever, and actually believe in it, and actually are educating themselves and whatever. And it, like, I can get on a soapbox about this, but you guys get the point. And it's like, it's so like pervasive how bad social media can be to everyone that is on the feed, right? Because you click on is what you're going to see. Period.
We should interview those people in those comments. Just say, hey, you know what? You got some questions? We'll bring you in on a live feed and let's talk.
Invite them or do like a call-in session or something.
That's how you should reply.
What
we're going to do a Zoom call. Are you ready?
I would like to challenge all of the listeners to not watch the news for 30 days and see how your mental health and your just life is in general. And then the same thing, like on your social, don't look at negative things. You know, I'll be the first to admit, I sometimes don't know what's going on in the world because I don't watch any of that stuff. Like if you saw my TikTok, it is rainbows and butterflies, but my life feels that way most of the time, you know? And it's definitely a fight for our attention. It's a war on our attention, right? And you've mentioned it. I notice if I am not on social media for a few days and then I get on it, I notice really quickly I don't feel good. You know, like it's a physical feeling almost. And I just sometimes long for the olden days when we didn't have all that stuff. However, that's not realistic either. You know, everything always progresses and evolves, and that's part of life. But I challenge everybody to be really careful of what they're putting into their minds and what they're allowing in, because you create your own reality. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now. And we frankly don't know if it's true or not. You hear, you know, you get different news stories on the social media about the same thing. Sometimes I'm like, all the rest of the world is just made up. And so therefore, I'm just going to make up my own little reality. And it's kind of crazy.
I'm a news junkie. I like to know what's going on. And I pay attention a lot into politics. But there is some points where I just have to stop. And then I'll just get completely stuck in my Audible books. Because right now I have 6 pending credits in my Audible account. And then I'll be like, okay. And then so now here, I know it's going to happen probably next week or two, and I will get stuck, and I'll probably listen to 6-7 books, and I'll be out of it for about 3 months. And then all of a sudden I'll get back on it, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, all this changed.
Yeah.
But I always have to bring myself back on it. But that, I don't feel like my social media, I don't have any news in my social media. And so my social media is just literally all real estate investing and my businesses. So I feel like I'm in a safe spot in that area. But in regards to the news I consume, I have stepped away from that before, and it is cleansing, and feels it does good. Release some stress. And then I feel really good about myself because I'm proud of myself when I step away from that, and I'm putting that time and effort into specifically listening to my books and my podcasts.
Yeah. There's a level at which we do need to know what's going on in the world. You know, if you're buying real estate, like an apartment building.
But your podcast can tell you a little bit of that too, though.
Yes, it can. It can. And I would just warn people away from the doomsdayers, because there's also real estate people that are doomsdayers because that sells. You know, I'm bent towards the negative naturally. I can naturally be a doomsdayer. And so for me, I need to not watch that stuff.
Well, you always say it's because your PTSD with the crash and in Arizona, right?
Yeah. And I think that's true. But also, I was kind of talking about that earlier. You know, that was a hard time. I lost everything. I rebuilt. I came back to Omaha, not because I had to. I was, you know, still in the top 5 of my office. But I came back to be closer to family, met Mike 2 days later. So
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. So was it terrible or was it an amazing thing that happened? And I just had to go, like, change is hard, you know? So the change, the catalyst for the change was hard, but it was amazing. You know, the same with my kids, right? And so for me, the thing that I've learned is you don't have to feed into the negativity. You will know if the real estate market has changed pretty quickly and pivot. You know, that's been my business. That's how we...
Just listen to your bankers. They'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, they're a little bit downstairs, too.
That's for sure.
This is my midnight...
We don't have an HR department this is my here at Rio Radio.
This is my midnight radio voice. And I'm Denlis Bertrand.
Oh, no, I don't sound like that. I sound like this. And I get real smooth.
I get real smooth.
And my voice can get real low.
Oh, yeah.
My 15-year-old found South Park.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Hello, children.
Like, you know, chef or whatever. So she thinks it's just fucking hilarious. So she's like, oh, my God, they killed Kenny. And then she won't say it, like, you bastard. I'm just like, okay, look. I want to...
Is this a good bathroom break spot?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sword fight? Yeah. No. I have to go really bad, too. I'm old.
On the other ass side of that, though, I've known Jerry.
The other ass side. Sorry. I mean, you said it. Go ahead.